Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.
Hey guys, Chris here, and welcome to another episode of Chris Talks Games. As always, my name is Chris, and I am talking to you about some games with you today. So, yeah, I'm covering one game in particular today, which is a game that I think needs or deserves to be put in the spotlight, because it is a very unique game and very kind of just phenomenal in what it's kind of done. But yeah, before we get too stuck into that, I will get started with the news. Okay guys, so two bits of some news mainly for you this week, this episode. First up is football games. Both EA and Konami are kind of not having great times with some of their football games at the moment, especially in the review stakes. Konami's eFootball, which is their kind of attempt at rebooting Pro Evolution Soccer. It's a free-to-play football game. They took last year off so they can move across to Unreal Engine and bring it back this year under a new brand and like obviously a free-to-play model. And it doesn't seem to be going down very well. It is the worst-rated game in Steam's history. Yeah, less than 9% of the reviews are positive anyway, and it is been heavily criticised for its basically the players' facial expressions and some of the physics and how the movement and just basically just a lot of the performance stuff. I know it is a new engine they've been working on, but it is a fact that they did take a year out to compensate for that, and it still has launched in a pretty dire state. Konami have said they will be working to fix it and improve it. But yeah, considering Konami haven't released a ton of games recently, they did have the Castlevania Advance Collection, which came out on the 23rd of September as a shadow drop on the Nintendo Direct Day. So that's come out recently and that's done pretty well. But it's not gone down very well, the football side, so could be back to the drawing board for them, especially as Pro Evolution Soccer was quite a beloved series. So it'll be interesting to see how they rectify eFootball, manage to get people back to play that. And on EA's front, the legacy editions of FIFA are still causing a few little bits of upset. I know IGN rated the Switch version of FIFA 22 2 out of 10, purely because they say it's the third year in a row they've literally released the same game with very minimal changes. Like they've literally updated some the kits, they've moved some players around to different teams. It's literally nothing that couldn't really be done outside of DLC. It is great on a few people that EA, especially the Switch, aren't putting much effort into those games. They are literally just copying and pasting and making some changes. I know last year IGN did just copy and paste their review from the year before, with like a sentence at the beginning saying that they copied and pasted their review, because that's what EA had done with the game. It is disappointing to see that EA are kind of taking a bit of a less proactive approach with the Switch versions of FIFA. Unfortunately, the thing is, it must seem to be selling, because they keep on making them like that and keep on releasing them. And it's just a shame that EA don't seem to spend the money with Switch projects, even though it is a massive system and has a massive install base, so it'd be kind of silly for them to try to lose out that money. But it's kind of, people must be buying it to for them to be able to carry on selling it and pulling it across, really. Next bit of news comes from the showcase from today, actually. I'm recording this on the 5th of October, and Nintendo did have their Final Smash Brothers Fighter announcement. But another announcement to come from it is the fact that the Kingdom Hearts mainline games are coming across to the Nintendo Switch, which is quite cool to see. One thing that was quite vague and unclear is whether they'll all be cloud-based or not, because they did say that utilising cloud, you can play the whole series, so it's whether it's just Kingdom Hearts 3 is going to be cloud, the other two are going to be natively on the Switch, or whether it is another method of doing it. That'll be interesting to find out and interesting to see. Especially the especially if they do look at the how they run natively on the Switch. I'm pretty expecting Kingdom Hearts 3 to be a cloud one, but it's where they will do the 1.5 and 2.5 remake and 2.8 games as cloud as well, or where they do put the time in to port it across. I think it would be disappointing if they were done as cloud across the board. I think especially the first game, 1.5 and 2.5 remix, could and should be able to run on the Switch no problem, because they were obviously games from much earlier console cycles, so Switch should have no problem really running those. It's more just more Kingdom Hearts 3 in particular, which would need the power, really. But yeah, there's no set release date yet, but it was announced that the Kingdom Hearts trilogy will be coming across to the Nintendo Switch sometime soon, which is awesome. And that grounds up my two news stories for this week, and going to move straight on to the main subject for today. Okay, so the subject for today is focusing on one game in particular, like I said earlier, and as I did mention it brief, or the event around it briefly in the news section, it is going to be looking at Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. Super Smash Bros. Ultimate is a game which I don't think we're going to see another one like it ever, really. It is such an impressive game, and it is pretty soft to the rafters with lots of stuff to do. And in terms of game crossovers, I just don't think it can be beaten. There is just so much in that game packed in. And I think it's once in a, certainly once in a lifetime kind of game, really. And I think a lot of people sometimes overlook it, even though it is a phenomenally successful game. I do think it is sometimes overlooked. So yeah, I'm going to go through some of the stats for Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. Just kind of see how it's doing. Up to the last sales information we have from Nintendo, which I believe was the end of June, up to the end of June, I think. Super Smash Bros. Ultimate has sold 24.77 million copies around across the world. That is making it the biggest selling fighting game ever. I think there are series that are higher as an overall, but in terms of an individual fighting game, Super Smash Bros. Ultimate is well and truly kind of ahead of the pack with that amount of sales. And yeah, it's just like in the presentation they had today, they did obviously reveal the new character. The new character was Sora from Kingdom Hearts, which I think is a amazing choice. As I will go through the DLC a bit later on. But it did end off the presentation because it was the last Smash Bros. Ultimate specific presentation. And it was the last DLC and stuff like that. So they did do like a little summary of things that went through. Spurs specs about the game and like stats. The final total of characters is 89. That does include classing the Pokemon trainers, Pokemon as three characters, and Pyro and Mythra as separate. I know some people don't class them as separate, but with the Pokemon trainer, you don't have to switch between Pokemon. You can use the same Pokemon all the way through the match, and they do control very differently. Likewise with Pyro and Mythra, you do have the switch mechanic, but you don't have to use it, and they are very different fighters on the front of it. With Mythra being much faster and swift, and Pyro being a lot more kind of forceful and stronger attacks. So, there's 89 characters altogether, using that method of separating grouped ones. They went through how many battle stages there were. There is 116 standard sandwiches. If you take into account the battlefield stages and the battlefield and Omega forms of stages, and the training stage as well, it does go up to 304 stages, which is pretty incredible amount. Because each stage does have two different forms. It has the Omega form and it has the Battlefield form, as well as its original form. So yeah, lots of variation, lots of different ways to play the course, play the levels and courses, basically. In terms of items, which includes Pokeballs and assist trophies, there are 201 all in, so there is a lot of different touches and game from different games and things like that, which is really good to see. The music is phenomenal in Super Smash Bros. Ultimate and Super Smash Bros. Series in general. Also, it always has some pretty incredible music in it. And there is over 1,100 songs. It takes almost 2 days to listen to most. If you listen to it all back to back, I think it'd take an insane amount of time. And so there's over 1,100 songs. The Spirit Mode, where you... It's kind of like a single-player mode, where you can unlock character spirits, which you can use to buff your characters and things like that, with different effects. All the spirits represent different characters from different games and things like that. And by utilising spirits, over 450 games are represented in Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. And there is 1,496 spirits as of today, pretty much. So it is a packed game. They also with the 450 games and the spirits, like, they do reference up to 2,200 characters. That does include characters that are in stage backgrounds as well. So, like, with Banjo-Kazooie, we have different characters show up at different points, and, like, Coco running underneath the stage in the background. That's kind of counted into that. And really impressive amount, quite surprising amount, really, when you look at how much there is in there. One last kind of... in terms of content, there is 140 Mii costume sets. Basically, Mii costumes is you can create a character and then you can use costumes to dress them up, basically. And there have been some incredible ones. Mii fighters, they got some deluxe ones. You had, like, Bomberman, you had Cuphead, had Shantae. Doom Slayer from Doom got added today to come out on the 18th of October. So yeah, there's definitely lots of things to look at and lots of different things to do, really. So got some actual gameplay stats as well, because they did reveal the gameplay stats in the presentation today as well. They're saying Since its launch in December 2018, the game has been launched over 2 billion times. It's been played for over 2.2 billion hours. So yeah, it is doing incredibly well on that front. In terms of battles, there have been over 11.7 billion offline battles, over 7.8 billion online battles, which is an incredible amount, pretty mind-blowing. And they've added up the number of KOs, and it is well over 90 billion KOs, so... Yeah, there's a lot of people knocking characters out on there, which is pretty awesome. One thing I think's helped keep Super Smash Bros. Alive and in people's thoughts and keep people going back to it, really, is the addition of the Fighter Passes. And there has been two different Fighter Passes. There was Fighter Pass 1, which came out the year after the game launched. And there was Path 2. Which has, followed on from Pass 1. And they actually kept pretty on target, actually, especially with COVID last year. I was a bit concerned where they would get everything out and all the characters done. But, yeah, they very much did impress with that. And very much kept to target with that as well. I'm going to go through the characters they've added post-launch. They did have a early adopters free character, which was available for a fee after the first couple of months. So if you missed out, you could still get his character. But it was announced in the last Smash Bros. Direct before the game came out that Piranha Plant was going to be a playable character. And he launched in January 2019. And yeah, if you bought and registered the game up before a certain date, you got him for free. If not, you had to pay a small fee to download him. The Piranha Plant was pretty cool, very unexpected. A lot of people were disappointed and quite annoyed because it wasn't a character they wanted particularly, but it's a lot of fun and plays well, so that's all good. And Fighters Pass 1 then followed on pretty much the day before Super Smash Bros. Ultimate launched at the Game Awards. They did reveal the first downloadable character, which was Joker from Persona 5. Yeah, such a great character. As you probably heard me say, I love Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. I do love... Persona games as well, so it's really good to see those guys coming together. But yes, Joker surprised a lot of people when he was announced as the first fighter, and as Reggie Fils-Aimé, who is the CEO of Nintendo America at the time, said, the Fighters Pass will be characters you weren't expecting, per se. Like, a lot of characters you necessarily didn't think were going to make it. Fighters that have never been smashed before, so... Yeah, it was awesome seeing characters like that come along. Then we had to wait till the following E3 in June for the next reveals, which was a 2-in-1 kind of thing. We had two characters announced at the E3 presentation. They started off with... Started off the presentation with Hero from Dragon Quest XI. And yeah, he's been a pretty cool character. He has a lot of things about the DLC characters that do have very unique abilities as well. So Joker could use the persona after he brought up a certain gauge. And Hero could use magic, like it's down B, opened up like a RPG magic menu, so you chose what move you wanted to do and fired it kind of thing. Also at E3 we did have Banjo-Kazooie announced as well. Banjo-Kazooie obviously are now Microsoft rep effectively, because they did buy Rare and get the rights to their games. And it was great to see Banjo-Kazooie make it across to Smash Brothers. When Sakurai did his presentation detailing how to use them, he did admit that if they were still owned by Nintendo, it would have been Smash Brothers long ago, like at least a couple of games ago. So, yeah, Super Smash Bros. Would have had Banjo-Kazooie much earlier if Rare hadn't gone to Microsoft, and stayed with Nintendo. That's pretty cool, though. Terry Bogart from Final Fight and King of Fighters was the next one to be unveiled. Another fighting game rep, which is really cool, because there are characters from all different genres of games, so seeing the actual fighting game genre being kind of respected and promoted in a game. And where they did have other fighters, they obviously had the Street Fighter characters, Ken and Ryu, and they've had other fighters added since, which meant that there's more basically fighting competitions out there, which is good. And good to see how your favourite fighting game characters kind of added up against each other, which is really awesome. And then to round up Fighters Pass 1, they did have Bideth, who was the main protagonist from Fire Emblem Three Houses. I know a lot of people were disappointed to see Bideth, and it was, as silly as I think, the least popular character from the Fighters Pass. So, yeah, unfortunately, Bideth wasn't well received, as people were thinking it's a bit of a waste of a space in the Fighters Pass, especially as people were wanting people like Crash Bandicoot or Spyro or Phoenix Wright. There are a lot of characters that people were clamoring for, and to see it go to Bideth was seen as a disappointment to some people. Especially, even though they made him quite different and they're quite interesting, a lot of people just saw another Fire Emblem character, which was a bit of a shame. It meant that the first Fighters Pass did have a bit of a anticlimactic end. But after they did show off Terry Bogart, they did announce that there would be a second Fighters Pass. So a lot of people weren't as disheartened. They knew there were more characters to come, which is good. Which then brings us on to the second Fighters Pass, which I had an extra character in the so I had six different characters, which is cool. And yeah, they had some pretty good people in round two of Fighters Pass 2. So yeah, first character up in Fighters Pass 2 was Min Min from ARMS. In my opinion, ARMS is a massively underrated game. It's a lot of fun. It's one of the first games I played properly on the Switch, where myself and a friend of mine went to a Switch Showcase exhibition. ARMS was one of the first games we managed to go hands-on with, and yeah, it was a hell of a lot of fun, really exciting, and yeah, just really loved the game and what it was about, really. Yeah, Min Min was added because it was a request by the game's producer, when Sakurai was asking about characters from ARMS to be able to put in. The producer did ask, out of the ones that Sakurai wanted to do, that it be Min Min, because that was one of his favourites. It was really cool how they had the mechanic going as well, because obviously ARMS, you can use motion controls, you do your left and right hand. They engineered the controls, so the controls controlled the left and right arms as well, so you effectively had both arms controlled, which is a pretty awesome approach, and well, I think right to right. But yeah, Min Min certainly did go down better than Bideth as well, because it's a different character, one that didn't have weapons as well. Next up in Fighters Pass 2, we had Steve, or Minecraft Steve, and their associated peeps of like Alex, Zombie, and Enderman, I think. But yeah, Minecraft Steve was a very interesting one. Wasn't one I was particularly happy to see. Like, I thought they could have done something better, but after playing with Steve, I do quite enjoy him. I think he's quite an interesting character. Different moveset and how they managed to incorporate a lot of the stuff. They had to do a lot of changes to some of the levels as well to make sure it all worked. So a lot of these DLCs aren't just a costume or a kind of quick add-in. They do have significant changes they have to make to the base game to make them work, which is pretty incredible, really. Pretty awesome. But yes, Steve, I was a little disappointed or wasn't overly chuffed to see them, but they did actually break Twitter. Twitter actually went down after Steve was announced because everyone was tweeting about it and getting super excited. And yeah, for a good little while afterwards, he couldn't post on Twitter. So that was a fun claim to fame for Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, the fact that Steve broke Twitter, which a lot of people still laugh and make jokes to and references to, which is pretty cool. And the Game Awards that year was pretty awesome. They did have a pretty sizable announcement, which was Sephiroth from Final Fantasy VII. Yeah, they had a very iconic character. That's the thing, a lot of these characters, if some of them are quite niche, but there are also characters who are very well known, very respected, and did you quite a nice mix between the two, which is awesome. Yeah, Sephiroth got announced and released that December, so it's December 2020, and yeah, again, quite a tactical character, very different in terms of how the thing's controlled, but very interesting to see them get stuck in, really. And yeah, like I say, a lot of people thought Final Fantasy VII had been a bit kind of neglected and a bit kind of screwed over, because the Final Fantasy VII rights situation is quite complicated in terms of music and stuff like that. So working out the music and bits like that you needed was a bit of an interesting one, but they did manage to work with the company to be able to add more music and bits like that from the game, which is really awesome to see. It was great to see Cloud have someone to face off against apart from Link. And yeah, just again, more good stuff from the Fighters Pass. The next up for Fighters Pass 2 was a quite a niche one, but it's quite a popular one as well, was Pyro and Mythra from Xenoblade Chronicles 2. A lot of people were wanting Rex, the main character, but as a bonus for getting the Fighters Pass 1, you did get a free Rex Mii costume, so he was relegated to the Mii costume realm, unfortunately. But yeah, with Pyro and Mythra being added, it was a... yeah, it's good to see. They had a very different reveal trailer. It was actually directed by the creators of Xenoblade Chronicles 2, rather than Sakurai, who normally does a lot of the trailers in-house. So in terms of the art style, the style of it, and how it played out, it's very unique. And a very nice trailer, actually, which is pretty good. But yeah, Pyro Mythra was really great, and they did bring back a mechanic from an old game, which they haven't been able to use because of the difficulties in the... yeah, sometimes difficulties with technical restrictions, so they did bring back the character swapping method. So Zelda and Sheik used to be one character, you used to press down B and you'd switch between Zelda and Sheik, but this now happened with Pyro and Mythra. So the good thing about them is they did control very differently as well. So Pyro is very much about power and slower and stronger attacks, whereas Myth was very kind of like dainty and kind of quite flexible and yeah, quite doesn't hit so hard but does do quite a bit of damage. So yeah, there's a lot of tactical thinking with that with Pyro and Mythra, but they were welcome additions for me. Then E3 this year, they did have Kazuya from Tekken announced as a character. Bandai Namco have helped develop the Smash Brothers series for the last two iterations. So it's great to see them actually get a rep added as part of the Fighters Pass. The fact it was a character from a Bandai Namco game and again another fighting game rep. So we had a fighter from another fighting game series, which is Tekken. A lot of people were really excited to see him make it in. It wasn't the most obvious choice. A lot of people were thinking either Heihachi or Jin. Whereas Kazuya is kind of like in the middle. He's Heihachi's son, but Jin's father. So it was nice they got like a middle character and quite an iconic Tekken character as well, which is awesome. But yeah, the show's a different breadth of the characters considered. Like, they're all different genres, lots of different gameplay styles, which is awesome. And then that leads us up to the presentation today. So today they unveiled the final Super Smash Bros. Ultimate character, Sakurai. Can finally take a break from the game because he has been working on it pretty much for, is it at least 7 or 8 years? So, so yeah, it is pretty impressive that he managed to do quite so well and literally keep the game going for 3.5 years after launch. Like, the Smash Brothers trailers are massive events. And today was no exception. Today was the final character, and it is Sora from Kingdom Hearts. Sora is the main protagonist from the Kingdom Hearts series, and the DLC is due out, depending where you are in the world, it's either like the 18th or 19th of October. Smash Brothers DLC does tend to drop in late in the evening in the States, so it's early hours of the morning in the UK, so we officially get it on the 19th, whereas the States get it on the 20th. So yeah, it's that kind of awkward crossover bit where, because we're at least 5 hours ahead of the States here, like if it comes out like 1 or 2 in the morning, it will still be the day before technically for the States. But yeah, that's one unfortunate thing. But yes, in the UK, it's the 19th of October that Sora hits the game. He is the most requested character of all time for Smash Brothers. Like, people go crazy for him. And it was one of those things people thought would never be able to happen, purely from a technical standpoint or technical side, and just be able to get the rights to him, really, because Kingdom Hearts is a tricky one because it is owned by Disney and Square Enix. The characters and music are Disney, whereas a lot of the gameplay stuff and a lot of the surrounding characters are kind of Square Enix. So yeah, it's very kind of complex and tricky to work out exactly who owns what and where they could actually do it. Yeah, they couldn't do it back 6 years ago when you got Bayonetta, but they did manage it this time, which is really good to see. Really happy to see Sora make it in. Very interesting move style. He is quite a floaty character. One thing I like about the characters in Super Smash Bros. They do work very hard to incorporate their moves, and if they've got any kind of notable moves or strengths on the pitch or whatever they do in their day job, they will be kind of transferred across. So that's great to see recognisable moves and things that you know about the character from their games come across to Super Smash Brothers. Sakurai is quite a big gamer outside of work, so he does play through and get to know everything about the series of the characters he's working on as well, which is nice bit of attention to detail by him. But yeah, that kind of overview of Super Smash Brothers. It is a brilliant game. I'm going to put my weight behind it and say it is a game you should play. Okay, it's a fighting game. It's not necessarily the most deepest game in the world, but you can spend a lot of time mastering all the characters. They all do have very different move sets and abilities and just the way they control, really, and how they play. The character you can't stand or don't get on very well with or find hard to master, someone else could absolutely love and go around and rip your ass with him. So, yeah, Super Smash Bros. Ultimate is a game which is very rewarding, very tough, but a lot of fun. And it does have a lot of passion around it. A lot of people do get really excited for all the reveals and all the other stuff that happens. Super Smash Bros. Ultimate is a game where I have literally seen grown people cry on reaction videos. Like, people just love it. So yeah, I'm really happy to see that a lot of people are happy with today's unveiling of Sora. Yeah, it is going to be weird going forward about that Smash Bros. Hanging over us. I say hanging over us, but obviously with the Fighters Pass and stuff like that, there's always, oh, we're going to see a new character today, or we're going to see this, we're going to see that. So the speculation was rampant with Smash Brothers. If you go on YouTube and search Smash Brothers speculation or Smash Brothers characteristics or character predictions for Smash Brothers, there are so many. And there are so many little leaks that could hint to different characters and stuff like that. Like, there was actually a Reddit or 4chan post back on the 30th of July which actually correctly identified the event for Sora today. So leaks were a thing, and a lot of people did do fake leaks as well, so it was very much up in the air which was real, which were fake, and who to expect. But I think the best thing going to Smash Bros. Was be prepared to be surprised, because you never really know what you're going to get. I, for one, would like to make a point of thanking Sakurai, the games producer, for everything he's done. And, well, he's a games producer and director. Like, he has worked tirelessly for years, like even over lockdowns in Japan. He filmed videos from his house to promote the new characters and stuff like that. So Sakurai is a very passionate game developer. You can tell in the work, like, you can tell, like, the attention to detail on the characters. Like, he'll study how they move, he'll study their move sets, and he'll make sure everything's perfect for them, which is, as many people do say in their reactions and things like that, he does go beyond, above and beyond. He does nail the characters, and each character is very different. They have their own control systems and own special moves and own kind of little niches or cliches, but they do work incredibly well. And yeah, it'll be good to see if we can get anything like this again in the future. I very much do think it is a once and done title, because I don't think, even if they're doing make another Smash Bros. Another Smash Bros. Game going forward, I don't think there's any way you could do it on any kind of level similar to what Super Smash Bros. Ultimate was. This is like a perfect storm. They managed to secure the rights to all the characters they needed or wanted. Yeah, they can get everything they needed done, which is incredible. Very satisfying as a fan seeing that come together. From our first trailer back in 2018, where people were losing their heads, literally crying, to September or early October 2021, and pretty much the same thing. People were very much still crying over the trailers, still in awe by a lot of the things that the game's doing. So yeah, if you do want a game that you can sink some time into but is a lot of fun, then please do check out Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. It is a Switch exclusive, which is cool because it's first party, but definitely worth kind of getting a chance to play Super Smash Bros. Ultimate if you haven't done before. But that kind of concludes my little overview of Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. Like I say, it is an incredible feat and collection of stuff. Okay, I'm going to touch briefly on what I've been playing these last couple of weeks. So, I get stuck in. So I've done a bit on Sonic Colors Ultimate. My physical copy finally turned up in Europe. It was pushed back due to like the delivery supply issues they're having around the country, basically. But yeah, Sonic Colors Ultimate has been a lot of fun getting stuck back into that. There are a few kind of bits I'm raising the eyebrows at in regards to some frame rate issues and there's little bugs, really, but it's been great having a bit of nostalgia getting thrown back into this game, which first came out the Wii. Dipped into Tetris 99, got the last campaign they did. I also have got a Monster Hunter event coming up. It's actually on this weekend as this show goes out, so if you want to win yourself a free theme, just earn 100 points playing Tetris 99, you can get a free free theme for the game, which is pretty cool. Animal Crossing, of course, has been seeing more love. A bit of Final Fantasy 13. So yeah, that's pretty much what I've been playing. Don't forget to check out Matt, Alex and Kerry next week. They'll be fresh from their escapades at EGX this year. I think they are planning to try and get some interviews done, so should be some cool stuff to check out. Yeah, it's a bit of a shame I can't make it to EGX this year, but it should be an interesting week for us here while the others get stuck away. Like I say, if you want to find me on social media, you can find me at ChrisThose37 and my YouTube channel is ChrisReactor. Yeah, so please do look into checking out my my stuff later on. But yeah, thank you for tuning in, guys. Thank you for making it to the end if you still are here. And until next time, speak to you soon. Thank you.
This podcast is a Mass Attack production for Visionaries Global Media.